We're just waiting for my guest. I'm Shannon. The space is being recorded, but I'm going to be putting my mic on mute until my guest arrives. And there she
Hi,
is.
Shannon. How's it
Hi.
going?
Great, thanks. Glad you're
Thank you.
here.
Thank you so much.
So we're good now. Okay, so we're gonna get started.
Okay.
So hang in there just a second. I'm just doing a couple of things.
Okay.
Before we get started, I just want everyone to know that the space is being recorded. The format is I'm going to be speaking with my guest Benita for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have a Q&A. If anybody wants to ask her questions, we'll do the Q&A after. And also, you'll see that there are some icons at the bottom of the space. If you could share the link so that others could join us, that would be super. And we'll get started. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
We are here.
We're here. Okay, so about me, I'm Shannon Skinner. I'm the host for today. I am a writer, a broadcaster, a speaker, and a consultant. I have a background in public relations and media for well over 25 years. I launched a show called Extraordinary Women TV in 2010 to tell the stories of women who follow their hearts. I'm doing Extraordinary Women here on Twitter and other spaces. This space is being presented by Extraordinary Women TV. And I also coach business owners and authors on how to get PR, so get their own PR. So I'm really thrilled to be talking to my guest today. Because she's done some really remarkable things as an entrepreneur. And so, on that note, my guest is Benita Caspo. She's a cheesemaker, an entrepreneur, and she's the owner of Caspo's Market. She's based in New Jersey. She's particularly known for her unique cheese called Gymnet. We're going to find out all about that. And so, welcome to the space, Benita.
Thank you so much, Shannon. I really appreciate you asking me to do this with you.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. And we got to know each other early in Twitter Spaces when Twitter Spaces first launched or opened up the feature. And so I was doing some early spaces and got to know you. And we've had some Instagram lives, and it's been lots of fun getting to know you and your company.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, and so for those that are joining us, tell us, what is Caspo's Market? Where did you get the vision? And let's go from there.
Sure. So Caspo's Market is a curated Middle Eastern food brand, and it was inspired by my Syrian heritage. I was born in Aleppo, Syria, and I came to America when I was 2 years old. However, I wasn't really Americanized because my family was very traditional, and I at home we only spoke Arabic, and at school I spoke English, and so I kind of grew up in two worlds. And I honestly can say the best part about growing up for me was the food that I was exposed to. I always loved it, and I would get excited if we went got invited to someone's house because I always thought about, what food they were going to serve us, because that's how much I enjoyed the food of my culture. So as I got older, and became an adult myself, I actually had this idea to do a food brand, almost 20 years ago. So I'm a little late, but it's not really late. But I do wish I did start it earlier. And what really kicked it into gear for me was actually back in 2018, I started working with Syrian refugees, and I started helping them with translation, and that was during the height of the Syrian war. And that really inspired me to say, you know, how can I represent this culture in a positive way? Because that was such a very difficult time for that part of the world. And it still is. It's still going on. But people don't talk about it that much anymore. So I've been making gibneh since I've been married, so a long time. And I said, I really would love to, like, share this with people. And I started giving it out to friends and friends of friends. And people would say, oh, my gosh, you should sell this. It's so good. And nobody knows what it is. So I did start my LLC back in 2018, but I never really got it up and going. And then during COVID was really when everything came together while we were all home quarantining. And I was able to get all my licenses and get everything, you know, properly done to have a real business. And so during the pandemic, I went for it and then I launched it.
That's so cool. It takes a lot of guts and grit to get a business off the ground.
Yeah. Totally, completely. It was, you know, it's still scary. There's still a lot of questions. There's still a lot I don't know. But I feel like it's funny. I always chuckle when, you know, when you wrote entrepreneur and you said that, because I don't like think of myself that way, even though I know that I am that definition. I just consider myself someone like on a mission to, expose people to food that maybe they're not comfortable with or they don't know about. And so that's really what like motivates me, is like this mission to make it happen.
And connecting food to culture.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So gibneh, let's talk about gibneh cheese, because more specifically, because I mean, this is so unique. So what makes it unique? I'd never heard of it before until I met you.
Yeah, so gibneh is made from, so it starts with curd. So I always joke around that I don't have a cow in my yard. Like, I'm not like going to get milk and making curd. I purchase curd, and it starts with a curd recipe. So you buy the curd, and then it gets cut into blocks. And I try to make them as uniform as possible, but it's not always perfect. And then I salt them, and then they have to go through a curing process. And what the curing process does is, number one, the salt penetrates the curd to give the curd itself the saltiness that you taste once the gibneh is fully made. And the other thing it does is it removes the moisture from the cheese. And what that helps with is actually the meltability of the cheese. And it makes it extremely meltable, and also it doesn't get oily. Sometimes cheeses that are high in moisture, when you go to melt them, they tend to get oily, and gibneh doesn't. So once, you know, the certain amount of hours pass that it's cured, then it goes through another process with cooking and seasoning, where I use this Middle Eastern spice called mahlab. And mahlab is derived from seeds of cherry pits from the Middle East. And these little seeds, they almost look like they're smaller than pinoli seeds, pinoli nuts, I'm sorry. And they're very tiny. And then what I do is I finely grind them, and it turns into a powder that is looks like sand. And that releases an aroma of like almonds and nuttiness and a slight floralness to it. And that is the second part that gets incorporated into the cooking process of gibneh. And then what happens is all the curds are, as you're cooking them, they're turning into cheese. And these little mahlab seeds are like grabbing on to the curd. And then you know, once it's fully cooked, it comes out and you see all the speckling on the gibneh. And then I have to cool it immediately after. And what that does, even though I'm not a food scientist, I just am an experienced person making this, it really locks in the flavor of the gibneh, is that cooling process. And then the next day, you know, you have to put it overnight. The next day it's ready and you're ready to go and eat it and enjoy it.
Sounds delicious.
It's really good.
And I know on your, website, you have, do you have like ideas for pairings with
yes.
it?
Yes.
You talk about like growing up, you would eat watermelon and cantaloupe with it and sounds really refreshing.
It's so delicious with watermelon or cantaloupe, either one. They're both, I can't pick one which one I like more, because you get that like sweet and savory combo. And also because the jibna is low moisture, it's like a, I don't want to say it's semi-soft. I say it's semi-hard. So it's softer than cheddar, but not as soft as mozzarella. So just the texture of it, along with like a fruit, is so delicious.
And also for pairings, because now I'm hooked on pairings here.
Yeah.
You can actually, you talk about apricot jelly, like you put on a pita and you can put apricot jelly on it. I suppose probably any kind of fruit jelly or jam would be good on it.
Sure.
And then toasting it, and it just sounds so delicious.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And, you know, in the Middle East, you know, we love like apricot jam. We love fig. You know, even cherry would be so good with it because it has, you know, the seeds from the cherry itself. And so any of those types of flavors where you're getting sweet with the salty is so delicious. And whenever you have like a warm piece of bread with a cold jam and then something salty on top, you're just getting so many different flavors and textures, as well as the heat from the bread. And so it just makes for such a delicious bite.
And where is your cheese available?
So right now, I do a farmer's market right now for the whole month of June in Madison, New Jersey, which is actually where my commercial kitchen is. And then it's available at Ideal Cheese Shop in Manhattan, as well as Day Bars now in Manhattan. That happened recently. And then, and also West Side Market in Chelsea.
Cool. Yep. This is really so cool.
Yes. And also, wait, sorry, one more story. And then in Maplewood, New Jersey, it's available at a store called the Maplewood Wheelhouse. So right now it's 4 locations. And then there's actually one coming up in about 10 days. And then something even bigger is happening probably within the next month.
Ooh, can you give us some insight or no? Yeah, or you can't yet?
I can't say yet. Okay. But it's in the works, and it's definitely going to happen.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah,
so I can't wait
to
do a follow-up with you. Your mission, if we can just circle back to that for a moment, because I love this idea of connecting food with culture.
Mm-hmm.
For you, you know, not so much teaching people about Middle Eastern culture, but you love for people to be able to experience the Middle Eastern culture through food. Is that sort of what I'm understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, and just unfortunately because of the news that comes out of that part of the world, it's never positive, like, to be honest. And I think that there's a perception of what that is. And we don't, you know, people are enjoying hummus and falafel, but, you know, they're not thinking about the people that come from there, I think, sometimes. And I really want that to be a focus, like where you're thinking like, oh my gosh, like these people make this amazing food. It's, you know, beautiful country. You know, I want there to start being a broader picture of, you know, where these places are and how wonderful they can be, and just kind of dilute that image that they see on the news about all the war and all the, like, the stress. So if I can be like a voice for that, that's really is my part of my mission. And and I think too, sometimes people can be intimidated by foods from other cultures because they might think it's complicated or they're unfamiliar with it. So I think that if I can simplify it for them, I think that that's another way for people to learn.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. And I can't wait to try your cheese sometime.
I know. I hope one day we can make that happen.
And when you were starting your business, if we can just talk a little bit about, you know, what it is to build a business. I mean, when you got started, what would you say was the greatest challenge for you?
So, you know, I think the biggest challenge is actually just taking the first big step, right? Like saying like, okay, I'm mentally going to do this. I think that's the biggest hurdle because I think so many people, especially seeing now on social media, you know, you watch TikTok or Instagram, people are very talented in the world. And I think that maybe they don't always give themselves the grace to say, you know what, I'm going to move forward and I'm going to do something with this. So I think that that's the biggest step is, you know, taking down like the mental barriers that we put up for ourselves to go after it. So that was like the first big thing, because I do have a young family. I have three children. It's very busy. It's a very complicated schedule. And, you know, it would be easy for me to make excuses as to why I can't. So I think that so many people experience that. And that was the biggest thing. And then once, you know, I knew, I was like, all right, that's it. I'm doing this. After that, you know, I think, you know, there, of course, like logistically, it's challenging with, in the beginning, especially because it was during COVID, was getting my licenses and having people come inspect my kitchen. I mean, those logistics were very, very hard. But, you know, I made it work. I got it done. And then off I went. And then after that, you know, you have to be okay with rejection, because there is a lot of rejection. You have to be willing to, you know, go out there and, you know, knock on the door of places and ask if you can meet with the owner. And so, you know, those hurdles are there, whether they're inside of you or they're just physically there and where someone's telling you, no, you know what, you can't talk to this person, or we're not interested. Those things come up all the time for me.
And one thing that you did extremely well, and I was really proud of you,
is thank you.
You managed, you managed to land a feature in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And, you know, as somebody who has over 25 years experience in PR as a public relations consultant and in media myself, I know how difficult it is to get publicity, but in particular the New York Times. And here you are, a small business owner. You didn't have a big agency behind you. You didn't have a big publicity budget as well, but you did it. You got this amazing piece.
Oh,
so congratulations.
Thank you so much. It was very exciting.
And maybe how did you do it? Because the reason I want to talk about this is because maybe there's an entrepreneur here, a small business owner listening. They may be in your industry or any other industry. And they want to do it themselves too. And mm-hmm. maybe by you sharing how you did it, that will inspire others to do the same.
Absolutely. So what I did was, I knew who Florence Fabricant was in terms of her name, you know, what she's about. And I said to myself, you know what? She's in New York City. New York Times is obviously in New York. I'm not far from the city. And I said to myself, why not just try? Like, that's all I said to myself. What could happen? She may not email me back. Like, if that's the worst of it, I've had worse things happen to me. So what I did was I put together an email. I tried to Google her email address. I wasn't sure if I found it. I think I tried a few versions of her email. Like, I tried, you know, just kind of like piecing it together with something at newyorktimes.com. And I wrote an email that was, you know, kind of personal. I told her who I was. I was very specific. I talked about how I came from Syria when I was 2 years old, and how, you know, one of the best parts of my childhood was the food I was exposed to. I even threw in a joke. I said I'd been eating hummus and falafel before it was trendy. And I explained to her what I was doing. I told her that I started this food business during COVID, and that I would love for her to try it. And it was just basically like three short paragraphs. And I told her where the cheese was located as well. And I gave her my contact information. So off it went. And then I waited to see if I got any email returns for wrong address. And fortunately, it went through. The one that I had selected went through. So I said, okay, now we'll just leave it out to the universe and we'll see what happens. So, and I did write also I thought it was a catchy subject line. And the way I positioned it was, I wrote, there's a new cheese in town. Have you tried it? And I thought that that would be a little eye-catching because it was new to New York City. I mean, it was absolutely true. And she's there. So I was like, she needs to know that this new thing is there. And she's a food lover. She's a cookbook writer. And I just thought that that might grab her eye. And so off it went, and then I just waited, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't give it a lot of thought because I'm so busy. And then one day, 6-7 weeks later, I get an email from her directly, from Florence Fabricant, and she writes back to me, and she says, hi, Benita, I'm sorry and might delay in getting back to you. I would love to try this cheese, and I'd be happy to go buy it. And then I was like blown away when I got the email. I was shocked. And then I quickly replied and I said, oh no, don't worry about buying it. I'll deliver it to you. So, that evening I put together a beautiful package for her and I personally delivered it to her building in New York City. And then she communicated with me that she received it. And then, and she said, you know, wait to hear from my team. And then her team contacted me and they said it will be in the New York Times next week.
And there you go. And it showed up. So
it showed up. And not only did it show up, because I'll be honest, I picked up the Times the week before to see her, you know, her articles and how they're positioned. And I didn't expect it to be that big. And it was actually a pretty large article, as well as the picture was about a 4x6 size. So that really blew me away.
Well, you know, congratulations, because, you know, as I was saying, I do know how difficult it is. You landed what business owner wouldn't want to be in the New York Times? So, right. So congratulations. And thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
And hopefully your little journey in getting yourself some publicity has inspired others. I'm sure that probably has opened or will open in the future some doors for you.
It did. It actually helped me get into Zabar's, and Zabar's is a very big name in New York and outside of New York as well. And that's what helped me get into Zabar's. So so far that it has been helpful having that article in my pocket. My advice would be is that just try. I mean, even if you know you're not a food entrepreneur, whatever type of entrepreneur you are, is if it's just an email, like, you know, don't say, oh, it doesn't matter or they won't read it. You don't know. And you also don't know what's going on their end, where they may be in need of what you're providing them. And what was interesting about my timing with the New York Times was, even though I don't celebrate Ramadan, my family is Catholic, it coincided with that holiday. And the Eid was actually that following Monday after the article was published. And so it was just such a perfect timing for something that is Middle Eastern to coincide with the Ramadan holiday. And you know, that worked out great for Florence as well. And then that story was shared. And again, when it came out, I really mean this, I know people may not believe me, but I didn't see it as just like a win for me. It was like a win for our culture. Like, now people across the world are reading about something that comes from the Middle East. So it was like a win for my people. It wasn't just a win for me.
I love it.
And that really excites me. And my neighbor next door is Egyptian, and he felt that way too. He said, oh my God, it's such a big deal that like people will know about this thing that we eat. And I said, exactly. I'm like, right, we eat. It's not, you know, Syrians eat it. It's across the Middle East. And that's part of bringing it back to culture and tying it back into food and educating people. So I think it's like a win overall.
And in fact, I was going to ask you as the last question, if you had one piece of advice or one tip.
Okay,
and I guess you read my mind. So your tip would be just try, right? Just give it a try. You don't know if someone, go ahead, pardon me?
Yeah, I would just say just try. You don't know the timing. You don't know what's going on with the other person. You don't know what their needs are. And, you know, I have a friend whose husband, he does a lot of marketing and PR for corporations. And he said to me, you have to realize something. He goes, you helped her out too. He goes, you gave her information about something that is so new, and that helps her. And I said, you're right. I said, I really didn't think about it that way until he put that in my head. And so I just say, just try. You just never know. Reach out to people, DM them. I mean, I've spoken to so many people that I never in my life thought I would ever speak to because of Twitter and emails and Instagram. I mean, I've connected with so many great people for my business. Just by trying. So just, you know, don't sell yourself short and just go out and do it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I have been so inspired by you, and this has been a great conversation. Every time I speak to you, I learn something new. And
thank you.
And thank you so much for being with me here today and sharing a part of your journey with those that will be listening. This interview will be on, it will be available, this recording will be available on Twitter for 30 days so people can listen to it. Now, if anybody wants to contact you, where do they find you?
So they can find me on Twitter. My handles are the same for all social media. So it's at Casbo's Market. Or they can find me at my website, which is casbosmarket.com. And if you send me an email through there, I will get it and reply.
Well, that's great. And so I would just like to acknowledge that this interview was powered by Extraordinary Women TV. And for anybody who's here on Twitter and you would like to join my Extraordinary Women TV community, I have a community. You can request to join us for some inspiring conversations and some, you know, we learn some things about each other. It's really great. And then to visit my websites, if you're interested in learning more about me and watching my interviews, you can visit Shannon Skinner at shannonskinner.com and also extraordinarywomentv.com. Ah, there we go. I got it right.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Well, thank you, Benita. And
thank you so much.
I'm wishing you all the best and with what you're doing. And we'll stay in touch. We'll stay connected. And once you have more to share, let's plan to talk again.
I would love that. Thank you so much, Shannon. I really appreciate you having me on.
And have a lovely weekend.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.